Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is one of the easiest picks I've ever made. Texas is loaded. Texas is number one. They have a Manning at quarterback. Poor Ohio State. They ain't got a chance. Give me my first love.
Oh, there it is. Here it comes.
Well, that was the voice of Lee Corso signing off after his long and storied ESPN career ended Saturday morning on College Game Day. And this is the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, as always, joined by Armand Brody. And starting this week, we're joined by producer Derek Futterman, who will be with us every week and occasionally chiming in as well. So this is obviously one of the biggest stories in sports media in a long time, the end of Lee Corso's tenure on Game Day, and what a tenure it was. One of the best known and most beloved ESPN voices, really the Dick Vitale of college football. The second, I guess it's a nonagenarian, am I right? The second nonagenarian to retire this year after Hubie Brown back in February. These are careers that have lasted far beyond anybody's, you know, possible expectation. You know, when Keith Jackson stepped away, I think he was maybe 70, 74, 75, 76. And at that time, it almost seemed like he was around for a shockingly long time. And now we have Hubie, we have Lee Corso, the late, great Dr. Jack Ramsey went deep into his 80s. Obviously, Vin Scully, and all of these folks have really redefined what longevity means in this industry. But Corso redefined a lot of things in his time on Game Day, including what a college football analyst even is. Before Game Day, what was college football on TV? With all due respect to Beano Cook, the reality of the matter is that it was not what it is today. There is no Pat McAfee without Lee Corso. There's no Big Noon Saturday without Lee Corso. Armand, your thoughts on Lee Corso as he rides off into the sunset?
So I love what Lee Corso means to broadcasting. I think the Regis Philbin comparison is appropriate. He has that level of charm to him. But I think about what Chris Fowler said to Dan Patrick earlier this week on the show. He pointed out, Fowler did, that there was a time when Corso was somewhat of a hot take artist. Back in the 90s, he would really go at coaches and go at players for some of the decisions they would make. So with Corso, you didn't just get the headgear. What he did was sort of perfectly marry true, real, deep analysis with entertainment. And I think as a result of that, you get what we have now. Now, some of it is very cheap imitation, but Corso was the first. He's the grandfather of how to do college football analysis in an engaging and an exciting and an entertaining way. And for that, the industry in college football owes him a great debt of gratitude. And I love the fact, and this just came out right before we started taping, I love the fact that even Fox is going to air his final moment, his headgear choice. I love that moment because college football owes that to Lee Corso in the same way that Hubie Brown deserved the flowers he got for his last game back in February, the same way Dick Vitale will deserve all of the plaudits and the praise he'll get whenever he does his final game. Lee Corso deserves that and because of everything he's meant to college football and to television and to sports broadcasting.
What do you think accounts for the change in tune that we've had with Lee, with Dick Vitale? You know, these are folks, Lee Corso, Dick Vitale, Stuart Scott, no one wants to admit it with Stuart, but it's true. They were all pretty heavily criticized in their prime 20 years ago. Maybe Lee less so, because Dick Vitale Billy Packer seemed to really have a problem with him. And a lot of people complained about him. Like, they didn't love the shtick. Do you think it's just a function of people getting older, or in Stewart's case, obviously the tragedy that occurred with him? Or do you think the industry is changing to adjust around that kind of eccentricity?
I do. I think the industry now rewards that. The industry now rewards the outgoing, maybe outlandish personality. I think the industry, and I think we even see it with what Fox is trying to do with Portnoy, and what FS1, or rather what ESPN has done with Pat McAfee. Essentially, whoever can sort of give us the most personality, just give us massive, sometimes excessive even, comedy, humor, reaching for that style, reaching for something that's going to grab the attention of the public. I think that's what the goal is now. And I think it starts with people like Corso, but as we've gone on, I think we've seen, because that's kind of how our society goes, you get a little bit of something and people want more of it, and then it intensifies. We add a little bit more fuel to the fire. We add a little bit more. And eventually you get something that doesn't really look like what it was originally. But I do think we've seen sort of this shift towards maybe more of a rewarding of the quote unquote entertainer rather than someone who may come across a little bit more studious like Billy Packer did back in the day.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's also on the play-by-play side as well. We talked about Mark Jones, but, you know, Ian Eagle getting to be the voice of the NCAA men's basketball tournament. I don't think he was getting that job, you know, 20 years ago. Right. And there's been a shift away from, you got to have a little bit extra. Even Jim Nantz has kind of loosened up over the years as well. And maybe that's a little bit of Lee Corso's legacy also. So obviously with Corso stepping away, game day is going to be completely different. I mean, completely different is overstating it, but obviously he's still the heart and soul of the show. What you have with Adam starting next week is McAfee, obviously. Also kind of low key, Nick Saban, right? I know Nick Saban was nominated for an Emmy and maybe even won one. Did he win an Emmy?
He did win, John.
Wow. I mean, Nick Saban, all he does is win, right? Apparently. But I do think that the show still has a lot of heavy hitters. It's still a very prominent show. It's still going to beat Big Noon, I think, regularly. I don't think Big Noon's going to be able to compete. You know, it's the tradition is still there, but what do you think game day is going to be in terms of that heart and soul issue? One, and two, do you even need a soul in TV anymore?
Wow. To the second question, I tell you what I would do. Saban's the guy. And think about this. ESPN had been chasing Nick Saban for over a decade before they got him. For some reason, I was watching the Auburn Florida State National Championship game from a few years ago. And that was 2014, I believe that was. Saban was on their studio as a guest analyst even way back then. And there was a report out years and years ago, and I think maybe it was Richard Deitch, that Nick Saban was already on ESPN's radar. And I think that was over a decade ago. Saban's the guy. There's something about him, not just the authority he carries, but if you can get someone like Saban, who is clearly a great communicator and a compelling personality and an iconic coach, to get someone like Saban on the show and then have him sort of bounce off Pat McAfee, I think that's your dynamic right there. Herb Street, I feel, his analysis has always been solid, but he does so much and he stretched so thin as it is, flying sometimes same day to go do the Saturday Night Football game. That Saban-McAfee relationship, I think that's your dynamic if you're ESPN. I think Saban is the guy that you really start to build that show around. And unfortunately, I know Desmond Howard just re-signed with the organization, but Desmond Howard doesn't really do much for College Game Day. Not in my opinion. Saban and McAfee, that's your tandem.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought up Desmond Howard. I mean, he's always kind of been a little bit of the third wheel or the fourth wheel on that show, even all the way back at the very beginning when he was there. I almost feel like he's closer to David Pollack, who they let go without any difficulty. And that's not an insult, you know. I mean, it's not like he's bad on the show. But they're going to have a lot of seats, even without Lee Corso, that are filled. But to that second question, because it seems to take you aback. Do you need to have a soul in sports TV in 2025?
I'll say College Game Day can afford to be, I don't want to say directionless, that's not the right word, but I don't think there has to be now as much emphasis on having an anchor like Corso, because I think the habit has been so established now. People just muscle memory, 9 o'clock, they know to go to ESPN. And I think as a result, they can sort of coast ESPN and College Game. They can sort of coast even in the post Lee Corso era.
Yeah. And just on that front, I mean, Lee Corso, this is going to be his 431st and final headgear pick. He is the last original member of College Game Day. So we are really seeing this show move in a new direction. And I think for people in the younger generation who don't tune into linear TV as often for that scheduled programming and maybe view the program more on social media in clip form, Pat McAfee is a huge asset for Game Day. He gives away his own money on the kicking contest every week. He's known for viral moments. I think McAfee can also help carry this show forward. You kind of have that blend of the new era with McAfee, with the tradition with a coach like Saban, and then another long tenured member in Desmond Howard, who, as you mentioned, signed that extension with the network.
Look, hey, Disney's trying to get Gen Z men to be interested in their movies. They've at least got one person that appeals to Gen Z men in McAfee, and of course, Fox bringing in Portnoy.
And don't forget, Katie Feeney's going to be a part of College Game Day. So there's another avenue, as Derek mentioned, another avenue that ESPN is trying to use to get to that next generation.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
On the subject of ESPN parting ways with some of their talent, now obviously this is not parting ways, but one of the biggest stories in the past few days was Doris Burke losing her position on the lead NBA Finals team for ESPN and ABC. This has been a very interesting stretch. So let's start with issue number one. You shouldn't have fired Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson, right? I think everybody acknowledges that. I'm not going to front, right? And this kind of goes back to what I was talking about before, Armand, which is if you go back long enough, you'll find that a lot of people who are beloved now were very heavily criticized. Corso, Dick Vitale, Stuart Scott, and Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson were very heavily criticized, really, actually pretty recently. If you remember the old meme template where they'd have Mike Green saying some conventional analysis, and Jeff and Mark are out in, you know, they're in outer space with what they're talking about. But look, longevity counts for something. They had great chemistry. We knew exactly what we were going to get. And when it came down to winning time, they were elevated. Jeff was not talking about second cousins in the final minutes of a game, right? And I remember in 2021, game two of the Western Conference Finals, the Clippers and Suns, Jeff and Mark were at a very high level down the stretch of that game. That was the Valley Oop, the first Valley Oop, not the second Valley Oop that Suns fans hate. The first one where it was Ayton with the dunk. And Jeff and Mark were immediately on top of the fact that that could not be goaltending. Now, look, could Doris Burke have easily had that same moment? Yes, she knows the game, but she didn't get the opportunity to have that, unfortunately. That's just luck of the draw. But Jeff and Mark were at the highest level that they were when ESPN pulled the plug. So does that mean it was a bad decision inherently? Not necessarily, because I actually am going to give David Roberts a little bit of credit here. Now, I've criticized David Roberts quite a bit, and I think that his decisions on the NBA side set that broadcast back tremendously. But I will cut him some slack on his plan. His plan was actually not that bad. So his plan was, okay, no Jeff, no Mark. How about Doc Rivers? And we'll promote Doris Burke. That would have been a good trio simply because Doc Rivers is the best analyst other than Steve Kerr not working today, right? And Doc's talent is that significant. I know a lot of people don't like Doc Rivers. They don't seem to respect him as a coach, but he walked right back into that booth and it was like no time passed. And anything with Doris, maybe, you know, as experienced as she is, you know, she also is someone who's never been on that lead team on TV. Doc has. So being able to kind of have the strength of Doc's performance there, I think was a help. And then he left. He was gone almost immediately. And now it's Breen, Doris, and Reddick, which also blew up the succession plan that David Roberts put together, because it was going to be Breen, Rivers, and Burke, and then Rucco, Jefferson, and Reddick. And then Jefferson left, and by the end, the entire plan was in tatters. I don't think it was the worst plan, though. And I think the fact that David Roberts had a long-term plan in place, and it made sense, is something to give him credit for. Of course, the best laid plans, right? That's an expression. So I'm not going to give him too much credit, but I will say I don't think it was crazy to make that decision. But once it fell apart, you lost Jeff and Mark, you lost Rivers, you lost Reddick, and now here we are, four different lead NBA teams in 3 years. Pretty disastrous. Although I do like, obviously, the Legler promotion. Armand, your thoughts?
I was initially surprised when it was announced that Jefferson would stay on the lead crew. I thought ESPN might give up on the three-person booth. They've been trying it for a while. And in the post-Van Gundy-Jackson era, I felt like maybe a change of pace would have been a good decision there. But they're going to do it again with three people. And I love the decision to elevate Legler. I wrote about this. We've talked about this on the podcast quite a bit. But the bigger story is of course, Doris Burke. ESPN had a dilemma. We kind of saw this coming. Andrew Marchand had a report out some time ago that ESPN was evaluating the booth and that everyone but Mike Breen was potentially going to be out of there. ESPN did not set Doris Burke up for success at all. Because everything that was going to happen was going to be compared to Van Gundy and Jackson. And because of that, when you put Burke in that booth and then Doc leaves, now you're scrambling. And honestly, ESPN is still searching. In the post-Van Gundy-Jackson era, they're still searching for the right fit. Who knows if Legler and Jefferson will last together for a while? We don't know. But this is just another example of what ESPN is trying to do in the post-Van Gundy and Jackson era. And the reality is, they never should have let them go. NBC did not break up Bill Walton and Steve Jones. They didn't. The only time they split them up was during the playoffs when they needed an extra crew. But anytime they had an opportunity to keep Bill Walton and Steve Snapper Jones together, they did. ESPN should have applied the same mentality, the same approach there. And as a result, you end up getting a booth that you probably didn't really want. Legler deserves the promotion, of course, but it does come at Burke's expense. And you've got Jefferson there who doesn't feel like a lead analyst to me just yet. There's something he's still lacking, but maybe more time around Mike Breen will help create more of a feel for him in that top spot as well. But I mean, it's if you're going to drop Doris Burke, this is about as good as it's going to get, unless it's a two-man booth with Breen and Legler.
Agreed completely. I will say the problem with Jefferson, he's Tom Tolbert. I mean, that's the issue. Tom Tolbert was not a bad analyst, right? But he didn't have the vibe, that serious vibe. And again, it kind of gets back to the Corso thing, right? I talked before about Ian Eagle. It took forever to get him a number one job. Well, there's a reason for that. And that in sports TV, if you are too jocular, if you are having too much fun, right? There's a bias against that kind of announcer when it comes to the really big games. I mean, let's think about this fact. Dick Vitale never did a Final Four, right? Lee Corso never had the opportunity to, but never did a national championship, certainly as a game analyst, which we remember he was a game analyst with Tirico. And look, the fact of the matter is, when it comes to Jefferson, he knows his stuff. He knows the game. But he doesn't have the right approach yet. And I will say, you mentioned Walton and Steve Snapper Jones. NBC didn't break them up, but they didn't put them together on that lead team until they had to. until it was, you know, the lame duck year. They didn't have anybody else and it didn't make any sense to, you know, to bring anybody else on. I mean, granted, they did hire Cason Williams that year and that didn't go too well. But, you know, I mean, the fact is, they it took until that final year before you got Steve Jones and Bill Walton on the finals together. And I think there was a reason for that.
And Walton did some finals without Snap with Matt Gukas in the mid-90s because NBC didn't think Matt had enough personality. But the larger point is when you have something, good booths are hard to find. All-time booths are almost impossible to find. ESPN had an all-time booth in Mike Breen, a generational booth in Breen, Van Gundy, and Jackson, and that's not something you let go. And they're going to be searching for something close to that for quite some time, and for good reason, because they're very difficult to come by.
And I think another important point here is that they called 15 NBA finals together, and this is now going to be Tim Legler's second year as a television analyst. I know he did radio for a little bit before that, but this is a move that's also potentially catalyzed by Mike McQuaid. ESPN had a little bit of a reorganization last year. McQuaid now oversees event and studio production on those NBA broadcasts. And he, you know, Marchand, Andrew Marchand of The Athletic, reported that he was a big fan of Legler. So I think what ESPN maybe is doing here is that they're bringing in a new product as this new media deal starts. And, you know, you've also had over the years, we've heard that maybe the NBA wasn't the biggest fan of Jeff Van Gundy criticizing the officials the way he did. I don't know how much here is it that ESPN is maybe capitulating to the wants of the league as they enter the next phase of this relationship, but certainly interesting to see how you're putting someone fairly new to TV analysis with Legler on with another new one in Jefferson, and then you have the stalwart play-by-play voice in Mike Breen.
But can I jump real quick, though, on the point about Van Gundy and the criticizing the officials? You mean to tell me there can't be a conversation had between ESPN and the NBA about making sure Van Gundy and Jackson sort of pull back on some of that? I mean, did it have to be all or nothing? I'm confused by that. I know there was also some reporting that ESPN was concerned that one of them would jump back, Van Gundy or Jackson would jump back into coaching. But I don't buy the whole, we don't like criticizing the officials, so just yank them all together. There had to have been reasonable minds can come together and say, okay, let's come up with some sort of an approach here. Let's rethink how we do this a little bit, pull back some, but to just get rid of both of them together is still just baffling to me.
I will say, you know, the final game that they did, game five of the 23 finals, it was a ridiculously bad call that kept Miami in a game that they didn't really belong in on a Jimmy Butler three, if you remember. This is a Jimmy Butler is kicking his leg out and kicks Aaron Gordon, I guess, in the groin, I think. Am I getting that somewhat right? And I believe that Jeff definitely was very critical in that moment. Maybe it was a final straw. But I will say this. If the NBA has the power to say, get this guy off the air. Now, there's definitely other people I would say that about before I went after Jeff Van Gundy. And we'll leave it at that because I've said my piece on certain folks plenty of times this year. But, you know, well, I think that's an excuse, honestly. I think ESPN did what ESPN always does. And, you know, you talked, Derek, you brought up Mike McQuaid. So Tim Legler is a Mike McQuaid guy. Mike McQuaid comes from Scott Van Pelt. I am excited about the fact that Scott Van Pelt's guy is making decisions at ESPN because now, look, there are people who don't like Scott Van Pelt. There's people who don't like Scott Hansen, right? There's someone for everyone in terms of not liking them. But Scott Van Pelt is probably the best liked ESPN person. And so the person who is responsible for that incredibly successful SportsCenter being in charge of the decisions, I like that. You know, I was much more concerned about David Roberts. He came in from First Take. Those are the two poles of ESPN. First Take on one end. Then you have the Scott Van Pelt folks over there. And so I'm glad Mike McQuaid is making these decisions. But I think ESPN having its lead NBA team determined by the whims of executives, because Doris was a Dave Roberts person, right? And Legler is a Mike McQuaid person. Who's the right person should be the most important factor. I'm glad Legler's getting the job, but I definitely think that if it's going to be ESPN making decisions based on the tastes of the executives who happen to be in charge, well, ESPN has a lot of turnover, you know, and they reorganize all the time. So are we going to come back in 2 or 3 years and they're going to switch again? You know, so I think they need to really have a broader vision for the NBA.
And I'll say one last thing on this. ESPN and ABC have had far too much transition when it comes to their top booths, even going back to when they started with Nestler, Walton, and Tolbert. That only lasted a year. Al and Doc only lasted a year. Al and Hubie was short-lived. Mike Breen and Hubie Brown was short-lived. Having consistency, I know NBC didn't have a lot of it in their time either, but having consistency is so important. And to break up Breen, Van Gundy, and Jackson, a sure thing. And then look on the other side, if you got Joe Buck and Troy Aikman together for 20-plus years, sort of comparing those two is quite fascinating. You've got all this consistency on one side and constant flux and transition on the other side. It's an unfortunate thing.
Are you surprised ESPN didn't go after more TNT people? I mean, Jim Jackson's just sitting out there.
Yes, I am. I've been singing Jim Jackson's praises for quite some time. I have no idea why ESPN did not. The only person that reportedly they had some interest in was Grant Hill, who is not a strong enough analyst on his own, in my opinion, to get a lead spot as a solo analyst. That booth with college basketball is strong because of Eagle and Raftery, not because of Grant Hill. I am surprised that ESPN did not go harder after someone from Turner. I am, because you have to at some point acknowledge that your roster is thin, because that's the other piece of the Van Gundy and Jackson element. When you cut them both, not only are you destroying your lead crew, but there's no depth behind you. So now you've got to take people from the bottom and bring them up to the top, and you have nobody else at the bottom. You got Bob Myers and Jay Billis doing some, and Corey Alexander doing some of your games, and these are not really NBA guys. I mean, Myers is, but Myers is not really a game analyst. He does more studio stuff. But you've got Billis and Alexander doing these games, Stephanie White doing some of these games, because you don't have enough depth on your NBA roster.
And Armand, I also think it relates back to, you know, this on the studio side. Inside the NBA is going to be airing on ESPN and ABC. The exact schedule is not out just yet, but the parameters are it's going to be surrounding marquee events, the NBA Finals. So you have to think about, how will ESPN go about treating NBA Countdown in terms of studio shows? Where are we going to see that show compared to Inside the NBA? And of course, how much freedom will Inside the NBA be allowed to have as well? These are questions I think that are going to be answered as the season goes on, but it's kind of hard to speculate for sure at this point.
That is a burning question. Let's mention the report that I put out a few weeks ago about Inside the NBA. Now, this was not necessarily new news. The only thing new about it was that ESPN is scheduling half-hour placeholder windows for Inside, which is obviously not, you know, less than the full hour that TNT set aside. The part that kind of took off on social was when I said that Inside wasn't coming back until Christmas. Now, this is old news. ESPN, when this licensing agreement was made back in November, said, you know, they listed all the weeks at Inside Beyond the Air and nothing between opening week and Christmas. That could always change. And frankly, I actually expect it to. I think ESPN will probably air Inside that Wednesday before Thanksgiving when they have a triple header. But as a general rule, most weeks, the first part of the season, it's going to be NBA Countdown. It's not going to be Inside the NBA. So they actually have to have a real studio team. What a lot of people forget, before the meltdown, you know, the Rachel Nichols, Maria Taylor meltdown, ESPN had three different studio shows for the NBA. They had Rachel's show, The Jump, before ABC games. They had Maria Taylor's NBA Countdown. And a lot of people forget, they had a Stephen A. Sports Center that served as the pregame show on Wednesday nights. So they were feeding all sorts of mouths, right? They had three different pregame shows. Now they're going to have two. And I have no clue what that secondary one is going to look like. And it's going to be on relatively regularly during the regular season, certainly on ESPN. Because even once Inside starts airing more regularly, that's still only going to be on ABC games. So you get to Wednesday night, any random Wednesday night in March or whatever is going to be NBA Countdown. I assume it's going to be Malika based on what Jimmy Pitaro said on the Brian Curtis podcast the other day. Probably Shanae Abumake, Kendrick Perkins. But that studio still needs to improve, you know? And there's such, like I said before, there's a lot of TNT folks out there, not just the ones people know like EJ Kenny and Chuck and Shaq. You know, Brendan Haywood's out there. Greg Anthony, who started out at ESPN, is out there. There's a lot of folks, if they want to improve that pregame, there's a lot of folks out there to help.
I will say that if you're going to do that with Inside, get the booth right too. I mean, if you're going to fix the studio, which you finally did after 20 plus years, get the booth right. We always talked about how TNT had the studio crew, but ESPN had the best booth. Now ESPN's got a great studio show, the best they've had, but they've left the booth hanging. It's like, we can get them both right. And that's why I feel like ESPN should have done a better job post Van Gundy Jackson of maybe going to grab some of Turner's talent, because a lot of Turner's talent is just better than ESPN's.
Yeah, flat out. Especially on the studio side, where, you know, Tim Kiley and all the people that Tim Kiley has influenced, they know how to do studio shows. ESPN can do a great road show. Game Day's always been great. I'll be honest, the last time I watched Sunday NFL Countdown with any regularity was Boomer and, you know, Tom Jackson. I mean, it was a while ago. It might have been, Rush Limbaugh might have been there still. Okay? So I don't know. But to me, when I think about that NBA show, it's just always been a drag. When the best version of your show is one with Paul Pierce on it, you know, and that was the best version of that show, it's not saying a ton. So College Game Day tomorrow, you know, right now I'm out of the bundle. I'm not in the bundle right now. But to watch Lee Corso's final game day, I'm going to do what I did when I watched Rich Eisen's first SportsCenter in 22 years. I'm going to pay $5 to sling and dip into the bundle for 24 hours. This is quite an incredible cheat code here that Sling has created. And I kind of get why Disney is suing them. It makes a lot of sense. It's wonderful. I don't really ever have to get ESPN Unlimited. I was kind of, man, do I want to get ESPN for $30 a month? And then Sling came along and said, no, you only want to watch one or two games here. Just get one or two days of a subscription. And so it's a fantastic plan. I'm not just saying that because, you know, of any business considerations. I mean, this is, if it's allowed to continue, how I'm going to dip into a random NBA Wednesday on ESPN. Because the fact is, right now, you can get a lot of programming for a relatively small price, right? I want to watch Red Zone. I don't care that deeply about an NFL game from start to finish. I want to watch Red Zone. To get Red Zone, you get NFL Plus Premium. Well, now you have Monday Night Football too, and Sunday Night Football and all the games, right? I have an antenna, so I can watch all the games on broadcast. So the ABC simulcasts are fine. And if I have to watch a Monday night ESPN exclusive on my phone, that's fine too. You know, you have HBO Max, you get TBS, you get NBA League Pass. You know, I mean, if you're not having to be in the bundle every day, you actually can save quite a bit of money. So with all that as preamble, as I mentioned, Disney is suing Sling to prevent this from happening. I don't think the timing was coincidental, obviously, because the streaming MVPDs, the distributors, have a lot of reason to be upset about things like ESPN Unlimited and Fox One. And this was, in my view, a little bit of striking back. And the fact that Sling so far hasn't backed down indicates that maybe they were, you know, rearing for a bit of a fight. But Armand, what are your thoughts on this streaming standoff you've got?
I don't even know where to start. I speak as a fan in this situation, sort of almost purely, because I don't want to work hard. As Billy Joel and Barry White said, I don't want to have to work that hard. I don't want to have to work hard to find my stuff. And everything that's happening from Fubo to the YouTube TV Fox standoff to Disney and Sling, to the ESPN direct-to-consumer piece, all of this stuff, what it's done for me is it's annoyed me, frankly. Because as a fan of multiple sports, I don't have just one sport that I watch and to hell with everything else. I like a variety of sports, and I want to be able to watch as much as I can in one spot. I don't want to have to go to 5 or 6 or 7 different places. And so what's funny is we went from break everything up to put everything back together. No, not a big bundle. Here's a mini bundle. Here's another mini bundle. Here's another mini bundle. And by the time you get done putting all these mini bundles together, you've got a bundle. You've got cable all over again, just in different places. So as a fan, I try to be journalistic on this one, but I can't. As a fan, can I get something that's going to provide me with as simple a path as possible to finding the games that I want to find? That's really all I want. And we'll see what happens with this lawsuit. But I just, what time's the game? What channel is the game? Can I find it? That's really all I want. And I lean to you and Derek on this more from more of the journalistic piece. This just annoys me as a fan because I do lack a variety of sports.
Yeah. And I'll just tell you that, you know, Jimmy Pitaro, who's the chair of ESPN, spoke about the importance of direct to consumer giving you proprietary data and having better understanding of the consumer. And I think something to look at as well is that Peacock is now going to be included on Amazon Prime Video's channels feature. Now, it's not the first streaming service to go there, but the latest one. And what that will allow for is Peacock to expand its audience as it's getting NBA exclusive games. It'll have an exclusive NFL game in week 17. But at the same time, besides Peacock getting that audience delivery with Amazon's more than 200 million subscribers to Prime, you're also, for Prime, you're getting another way to, you know, one, attract customers, but two, see the data as to what they're interested in and where they're going. And I think that's really valuable also. And it's something that I think ESPN, DTC, Fox One, they're all looking for as they also try to offset the loss of linear subscribers with cord cutting.
Let me ask you this. I'm a sports fan. I'm a generalist. Lay these options out here before me. Everything that we know about everything that exists right now. As a generalist, where should my focus be? Where should my energy be right now?
It's a question that every consumer has to right now decide for themselves based on their preferences. But I do agree with your larger point about all of these bundles. ESPN and Fox long have been competitors. They're bundling starting on October 1st. You can get those services together. Mm-hmm. There's been something for a while, StreamSaver, that allows you to get a bunch of services for $15 a month. Peacock, Apple TV Plus is included in that. There are so many ways to bundle these streaming services today that I just think for the consumer, it's going to come down to education and it's going to come down to simplicity and finding where the game is. And it's becoming more challenging than ever today to do that.
I think one of the most interesting things to me is the skinny bundle concept. These bundles are not skinny, right? This is kind of a ridiculous concept. A $56 sports skinny bundle that includes Fox News is a bundle, right? It's not a skinny bundle. A $70 skinny bundle that gives you Fox News, CNN, and MSNBC, again, it's not a skinny bundle. I want sports, just sports, that's it. And I'm going to want it for less than $50 a month. 50 is kind of the threshold. And yeah, we were paying a lot more than that for cable. But you know what? When we started paying for streaming, it was $30-something. So that's the comparison. I definitely think the streaming MVPDs are in a really bad spot, right? You think about ESPN and Fox One together for $40, ESPN and NFL Plus Premium for $40. Meanwhile, the lowest that these other streamers can go is to $56. You know, I mean, that's tough. And that to me is one of the reasons why you see a move like what Sling has done, which is a pretty aggressive move. To me, I do feel like people aren't 100% taking seriously the idea that sports fans can do other things and pass their time in other ways, which is weird because I know we keep having another new Nielsen, you know, methodology every 5 minutes. And so you can't really tell if people are watching at the same level that they used to be. But I do feel like one of the big problems is certainly young people aren't tuning in the way they used to. What young person is going to get into the bundle now? What young person is going to go, wow, I can't wait to really start following this sport? Well, actually, of course, they're all just illegally streaming. I mean, that is true. They are. They are just illegally streaming. So it's not hard for them. But there is an element of rearranging the deck chairs a little bit in my view with this. And doing so in this really kind of frenetic, you know, almost manic way with all of these different bundles, all of these different offerings that are bound to confuse people. And other than the Sling deal, none of these are really that good of a deal.
Remind me what the venue price would have been. Was it 43?
Yeah.
You would have been speaking my language there. Rest in peace, venue. But you would have been speaking my language a bit there. But as a fan, and Derek made the point, and it's true, and it's unfortunate, you're going to have to decide what you can live without. And to your point, John, executives do need to be more aware of the fact that we can live without some of this stuff. We really can. I can go without watching Maction during the week, during the college football season. I can go without that. I can go without some of these NBA games on Peacock. I can't. Either you're going to have to be a hardcore fan of a sport and just be like the NASCAR folks with Amazon Prime now, just lean into that and grab a hold when those races are there and just go wherever the sport goes, or be sort of like me, a generalist, and just say, where is what and what do I do? And it does require a level of education. And the question becomes, are fans willing to do that? Are they willing to invest that kind of time and energy and money into something that in the grand scheme of things doesn't really mean a whole lot? And so that's a question that fans are going to keep having to ask themselves as time goes on, and executives are going to keep having to bend a bit, one would think, to try and meet where we are economically in our society, as well as the massive sports rights, all the money that these networks and these streamers are paying to have these games. You're going to have to sort of figure all of that out with what the desires of the fans are. So this is a fluid situation. And all I can tell you is if you're a fan, you may need to have a little extra source of income from somewhere to keep up with all of this stuff. If you're a generalist like me, you better find something that you like and hold on to it for as long as you can.
And one more point from my end here. Gunnar Wiedenfels, who is the incoming, he's going to be leading the Discovery Global company, which is going to be spun off from Warner Brothers Discovery, said on their earnings call recently that they're planning a standalone product that could be taken direct to consumer. Now, of course, that's notable because Discovery Global is going to have the rights for TNT Sports. On top of that, Alex Sherman did an interview with Matt Hong, who's the president of sports at Versant, and he talked about the value that Versant could have in having freedom to partner with other streaming companies. And, you know, again, still interest in working with NBC Universal and Peacock, but upon Versant being its own entity, they could go out and potentially get involved with other streaming platforms and do some bundles. So I think it's just interesting to see how spinoff companies are even starting to look outside their own organizations. And everyone, there's real synergy in trying to sustain streaming and digital distribution on a long-term basis.
I think one of the things that's going to be most essential is making yourself essential. You know, we talk about all these companies wanting to make a streaming service. Well, what do they have? Right. If TNT Sports makes one, what do they have? I mean, one of the things that I think is important to keep in mind is that cable is only valuable for the entirety of the channels you get. Right. No individual cable channel is really all that valuable, including ESPN. It's that you get all the games. So what has ESPN been doing? ESPN is going to try to get all of MLB.TV. That would make ESPN essential to a baseball fan. You might not like ESPN. You might not want to even get ESPN, but you want MLB.TV. It's every night, all season long. And there's a lot more of those games than there are of national TV games. And so it's a different level of commitment. And that's what ESPN is trying to get with its new app. Whether you're talking about that or NFL Network, MLB Network, these league-owned networks are also a different level of commitment. If you are just a regular sports fan, $30 a month just for ESPN is not a great investment. And maybe 40 for ESPN and Fox might be. But as long as that sling $5 a month plan or $5 a day plan exists, you know, I'm just going to have to pass on ESPN Unlimited until that's voided by a court somewhere, because that's a much better deal.
And John, is that something you think we see at a ESPN or Fox one day, offering a day pass, offering a 2-day pass for their service?
No, because it's a killer, right? Because the secret is you really only need ESPN for one or two specific days. And you don't need FS1 except for maybe 2 or 3 days a year, okay, for the LCS or something. Like the whole point of the monthly fee is to ensure that these networks get money on the many days of the year when they're not airing something that's interesting, right? And ESPN's cutting back on live sports too, so that's going to be even more significant.
Now, come on, John. You know you need to watch Greg Jennings join a segment on First Things First. Come on, John. Don't do that.
I assumed he was still playing, so I was not aware that he's on TV now. All right, well, we talked a little bit about MLB.TV just now, and I think it's as good a time as any to talk about what has probably been the most interesting, maybe not the biggest, but the most interesting story of the summer, in my view, which is the Major League Baseball media rights discussion. And there's been no news on that front the last couple of days, but a big flurry just prior to that. We'll start with, there was the Kendall Baker report that made a lot of waves. I'm not really sure what the source was, obviously, that was saying that Apple could lose its Friday night contract. I don't think that was ever on the table. That, to me, was completely erroneous. But the rest of Baker's report was pretty solid. Obviously, we know that ESPN is seemingly in the mix for, I think it was Andrew Marchand who reported it would be a weeknight exclusive, 30 games, so same as Sunday night right now. That's 26 weeks plus 4 extra games, maybe a doubleheader here or there, or maybe games on other nights. NBC for Sunday Night Baseball, Netflix for the Home Run Derby. And ESPN's deal also includes, on a local level, MLB.TV out of market, and the 5 MLB teams whose rights reverted back to MLB, the Guardians, Twins, Rockies, Diamondbacks, and who is the last one? Who wants to guess?
Padres.
There we go. The San Diego Padres. So that's a great haul for ESPN, who will continue to pay $550 million a year to MLB, according to Andrew Marchand. That is a huge win, really more for ESPN than for MLB, and I'm going to explain why. MLB being able to recover all of the money that ESPN was going to pay while adding 2 new partners is a great accomplishment. But these are very valuable rights that MLB has given away to save face. MLB is giving away rights to MLB.TV and local rights to 5 teams. You know, that's a solid 6th of the teams in baseball. And only getting $550 million a year for it, that's still not a great deal for baseball. It allows them to save face. It allows them to say, hey, we didn't take a dime less from ESPN. But I just don't look at those types of rights, which are so much more meaningful to ESPN than Sunday Night Baseball. I just don't look at giving away those rights for that amount of money as being a huge win. I don't know. What do you think, Armand?
Well, I have a question for you and Derek. I would love to know. Marchand's report also talked about the ESPN deal potentially including MLB Network. What do we know about that?
Derek, I'll let you jump in here. Derek is working on a piece about MLB Network. He was just here at their headquarters earlier this month.
Yeah, and on the MLB Network front, full disclosure, I was at their headquarters prior to this story breaking, but from what I understand, it would give ESPN the rights to distribute MLB Network on their direct-to-consumer service. So it would be similar to, again, what we were talking about before with Peacock on Amazon channels. They would have the rights to distribute MLB Network. But from my understanding, MLB Network would continue to be owned and operated by the league. It's been doing it that way since 2009.
Yeah, that would be my expectation as well. And of course, that's the ideal scenario for ESPN. They would much rather do that than buy NFL Network. Buying NFL Network, only the NFL could force ESPN to do something like that. But being able to license the network for this direct-to-subscriber app, now, talked before about ESPN making itself essential, you have an app where you can get MLB Network, NFL Network, MLB.TV. You can get your local team if you're in Cleveland, San Diego, Arizona, Colorado, etc. This is a big, big step beyond, oh, hey, we've got a game of the week every week. You can skip a game of the week every week. It's not, you don't have to tune in. And so to me, this is, again, way beyond just $550 million. At the very least, it's worth more than what ESPN is giving up. And pretty significantly, I would say.
You know what this makes me think about? I was having a conversation with a friend of mine the other day. We were talking about ESPN. There was a time not that long ago where if you asked me what the face of ESPN is, I would say Stephen A. Smith. But now, with everything that ESPN is doing, having their hands in so many different areas, accumulating as much content as possible from as many different sources as they can for the direct-to-consumer piece and for a linear television, I would say the face of ESPN is ESPN itself in a way now that is more pronounced than it has been in quite some time. ESPN under Jimmy Pitaro has really shifted the entire outlook of the organization to the degree now that nothing is more important than ESPN than accumulating as much stuff, having as much content as possible to make it, as you said, John, and as you wrote about in your Monday Musings piece, to make it a necessary element, to make it inescapable, something that you must have. That message is as clear now as it has ever been relative to ESPN.
And Jimmy Pitaro's talked about ESPN, even at the direct-to-consumer event. He's talked about his desire for ESPN to be a sports hub. And it's something we've seen in the personalized sports center on the app, which is a great feature that I've had the chance to experiment with a bit. And what getting MLB and specifically MLB TV would help them do is reduce churn. Of course, you have the WNBA over the summer. That programming has been tremendously successful. It's been rapid growth, but there's always, right now, there's a looming threat of a potential lockout. MLB has that same threat in 2027, but next year you have a season that's going to go on without a hitch from what we can tell with Major League Baseball. So I think reducing churn, especially in year one, as people are going to look for some ROI back on the app, could be valuable for ESPN. And one more important point here, just on the MLB rights, to bring it back to the NBC element of this. NBC in February this year will do the Super Bowl, the NBA All-Star Game, and the Olympics taking place in Italy. After that, there could be a reasonable expectation for some churn for a sports fan. But now you're going to suddenly bring Major League Baseball into the mix, and that could help change the equation. Albeit you do have some other summer programming with golf, with NASCAR, but it's going to be important, and maybe it'll be interesting to look at the data to see what MLB would do to help reduce churn on the Peacock front. Of course, Peacock, 41 million subscribers seeking to grow.
But to that point, it's one game a week. If I'm a baseball fan, 162 games. One, NBC's a broadcast network. They're not going to have all those games, but they're going to have some of them. We know the baseball schedule's out. Looking at that schedule, I already kind of have an idea of what Yankee Red Sox games are going to be on regular NBC. Kind of see those weeks. I don't know how effectively you can reduce churn with what is ultimately a linear style package. And a linear style package would be, we have one or two games a week involving multiple different teams. You can work around that as a fan, all the way down to, well, I guess things like Peacock don't do free trials anymore. I mean, they can't. That'd be disastrous for them. But, you know, I mean, even if you were to sign up just for 1 month, like, let's say you're a Tigers fan. Tigers were on Sunday Night Baseball twice this year. I think within maybe a 1 month span, right? Something like that. It was relatively short order. You don't have to get, oh, I got to get a year of Peacock so I can get all the Tigers games on Sunday Night Baseball. I mean, to me, if you want to reduce churn, it's going to have to be that MLB.TV, that tonnage where you are, if you want the game, this is the only place you can go. Unless it's on national TV, it's the local games, right, that are the things that will reduce churn, in my view. In market, out of market, You know, those are the things that make people stick around for longer. That and just muscle memory. And the thing about the overall bundle is you have so many different channels that you still will stick around for in a slow period of time, because there's always something. I stuck around in the bundle a little bit longer than I ordinarily would for Wimbledon and the NBA Summer League, believe it or not. Didn't actually have to, though, because I have ESPN Plus and they were both on ESPN Plus. So I actually ended up spending like $70 more than I needed to, which is another factor. As long as you're going to have these directed subscriber platforms with so many of these events, you know, you're kind of taking away from that bundle as well.
I'll say this. It would be in the benefit of those who are listening to just keep listening to the podcast, because we're going to help you guys save money. We're not just giving you knowledge here on this podcast. We're helping you save the bills, the dollars. So keep listening to us on this podcast. We're finding out ways to make sure you keep some money in your pocket.
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows? The economy has held up remarkably well, but I don't know how much longer that could possibly last. And look, I mean, honestly, that's, you know, what happens if there's something economically that occurs? What happens to this house of cards if there's a recession or, you know, even just a downturn? Anything that occurs that makes it irresponsible for the head of a household to be spending $30 a month on ESPN is going to be something that maybe needs to be considered as a potential problem. All right. Well, that's going to do it. We have covered as much as we can cover here on the final summer edition of the podcast. The NFL season begins Thursday, and it is officially going to be fall. Fall doesn't start really until late September, but the moment they're playing NFL games that count, that is when the fall has started. Looking forward to that, and as always, thank you to Armand for joining me. Thank you to Derek, and thank you to all of you for listening. We'll be back with more stuff on the Sports Media Watch podcast.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.